You're listening to the World's Robert Crichton podcast. New audio freshly delivered every week, direct from me, Robert Crichton. If you like this audio, consider becoming a patron. Go to patreon.com/Robert Crichton to help support my work. And now, your podcast. You're listening to The Other Day, a story from The Other Day about me, Robert Crichton, and my day, The Other Day, as opposed to today. It was definitely another day. The other day, in fact. Hence the title. The Other Day. That's what this is called. The Other Day. Yeah. The other day, I was walking into the village to play Hunt the Tourist, a popular game involving a crossbow and unwary travellers. It's frowned upon in some communities, but really, it's a kindness, as they'll only start breeding if their numbers aren't kept down. My plans were scuppered for two reasons. Firstly, because my crossbow had been borrowed by our next-door neighbour to deter casual visitors.
Get your tractor off our grass.
And secondly, because upon crossing the unseen parish boundary line from open country into the security-bound homestead of the village, I found, to my surprise, that tourists had not been allowed to roam freely, as the cockroaches they are. I sniffed the wind, but I just couldn't sense the usual aura of lost tourists.
For the love of God, where are we?
The buses were empty and idle in the car park, but the normal roaming hordes were not to be seen. My confusion was settled when I finally discovered the queue. The natural pack instinct of the tourist had led to them being corralled by clever signage. It was a satisfactorily lengthy queue, snaking out of the disabled toilets. The council must fix them someday, but there's never a hurry when ditches are so plentiful. It wasn't till I got closer that I saw the banner and realised the queue wasn't due to a need to empty bladders, perhaps caused by a disastrously contaminated batch of organically sourced scones from the local hostelries, but was in fact for some kind of civic event. The banner read, Bank Holiday Event, Genuine Medieval Village, Entrance £64 or Best Offer. I'd forgotten it was a bank holiday. Hence it was that I'd left the house without an umbrella, and so was getting soaked. A woman, dressed very convincingly as a plague victim, was working the line, ensuring the queue was straight and belligerent in accordance with fictional EU regulations. The tourists, to a soul, resisted all attempts to remain in line, but they didn't know any better, being foreign. Some lived almost 5 miles away, which means they're not to be trusted. I naturally joined the queue with the instincts of a true patriot who liked to prove a pointless point and show them how it's done. It was only after I'd started my second Mexican harumph of disapproval down the line that it occurred to me to ask the plague victim, who appeared to be in charge, about the event. Where have you actually set up the genuine medieval village? I asked. In the meadow? No, dear, the plague victim said, hacking responsibly. It's all around you now. Is it? I inquired, confused, for apart from all the medieval buildings and barely suppressed views on women's rights, race, outsiders, and the printing press, I couldn't see anything medieval at all. Oh, no, she explained. We haven't brought anything in. We looked at hiring actors and reenactors and the like, but just sorting out the genuine fake medieval costuming would have blown the budget. So, the committee, deciding that a shit ton of Hessian was far too expensive, instead decided to install a temporal shunt engine in the disabled toilets and punch a hole in space-time so that we can visit the actual village in genuine medieval times. How is punching a hole in the space-time continuum cheaper than buying a few costumes. We only hire it for the weekend, and it is second-hand. But isn't a temporal shunt engine in the disabled toilets horribly disruptive? No, said the plague victim, wiping away the flecks of blood. If anyone needs the lav, they can always nip into the pub. I meant disruptive to causality. The plague victim was dismissive. No one seems to have noticed anything yet, she said, pausing briefly to shoo away a stray velociraptor. You should keep that on a lead, she bellowed, but the dinosaur's owner merely shook his head at her. Charming, the plague victim said, firing a poison dart at him from her tail and killing him instantly. Whatever happened to manners? I think we voted to abandon them when they were considered passive-aggressive, I said. What's the medieval experience like? Oh, it's difficult to say, the plague victim said, scratching at her fake sores with a stray antennae. The first year we tried it was only a moderate success. Everyone found the past delightfully backward and primitive, to be sure, and almost no one noticed that we'd made a mistake and sent everyone back to 1979. We think it was the demonstration food event with the cheese and pineapple on sticks that gave it away, which I thought odd, as no one batted an eyelid at the fondue pot. She paused briefly to flick back her blue hair so that it didn't obscure her third eye. That said, last year wasn't much better. We ended up circa 1350 and half the attendees died of the Black Death, though the other half thought that the early demise of their family and friends through an ancient pandemic was infinitely preferable to the 1970s and made the best of a bad job. But that might have been the fever talking. So difficult to get a proper assessment on the exit surveys when they're carried off in a stretcher. But now, the Amazon warrior woman and I had reached the front of the queue, which was good, as the persistent acid rain was playing merry hell with the hydraulic pistons of my exoskeleton. It's never been the same since that run-in I had with the Neanderthal assault forces in the final battle of the winter killing season, but my kit had always been a bit unreliable. Is it safe? I asked my companion, the 12-foot-high warrior raven, a veteran of the reality wars we've been fighting since before I was hatched. Course it's safe, dearie, she said. This temporal shunt engine has a 100% safety record. It's Corgi registered. But Corgi is a defunct registration body for gas fittings, I protested in my mother tongue of high Klingon. It was replaced in 2009 and has nothing to do with temporal engineering.
There's always one recruit who thinks they're an expert,
said the heavily armed sentient battle tank beside me.
We've detected no damage to the fabric of reality since the moon disappeared.
That's all right then, I said. So what am I doing again?
You,
said my commanding officer,
are a space reaper of the 7th Shield Battalion going into battle for the glorious Empire of Fedeshethach. And on behalf of the honourable dead of Spaghetti Fog, I salute you for undertaking this truly scrumptious amazeball suicide mission.
Right, I said, powering up my laser death cannon. So long as that's clear. And as I stepped into the portal of infinite possibility, ready to face the enemy and my destiny as a warrior, I had a moment of clarity which few are granted. I had survived the radiation swamps of Swindon, the hailfire of the Brunswick Confederacy, and even managed to survive an encounter with the Eamon Holmes monster. But all of that would pale before this mission, which I knew would be a complete success. And the moment I achieved that clarity, I stepped through the portal and into battle, where I was immediately cut down by the megadeath rays of general inaccuracy. I lay on that lonely field, somewhere out in a galaxy of lost campaigns, aware, slightly, that reality was possibly coming to an end for the whole universe. And that, dear listeners, is how I died. Until my next death. Goodbye. You've been listening to an The Other Day story written and performed by Robert Crichton. Other stories of my grisly demise are available while stocks last. To support this and other podcasts from the worlds of Robert Crichton, go to www.patreon.com/Robert Crichton. And for as little as only $1 a month, exchange rates vary, you can get additional bonus features and audio stuff.